You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, Dog fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, DJ Preach, and the guy with the best damn hat collection in all of the podcast universe, Juice. How you feeling today?
What up, Big Seth?
Oh man, everything is everything, as they say. I'm just smiling from ear to ear, man. This is a guy that I keep in touch with, but I haven't seen him in a minute, and I'm so excited he's here with us. But yeah, looking forward to a great and potentially surprising interview today.
Right, I'm looking forward to it as well, man. Big J Will, man, that dude right there, man, it's gonna be a lot of fun. I've heard a lot of crazy things about him, and I can't wait to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think you'll get any denials either. I think
He didn't flinch.
He didn't even flinch. I absolutely love it. So, look, Jay, before we get too deep into it, and we like to go deep, Miami Dolphins Tales from the Deep here in the Fish Tank, there is a particular theme that is going to dominate the conversation today. I have a feeling. You know, everybody I tried to call, tell me your best Jay Williams story, and it all came back to this one theme, and we'll get there. And I don't want folks to think that it's like over the top or to be concerned. And I think we'll get to that as well. But talk about, you know, I want to give some context. So talk about the fact that you grew up in Washington, D.C., and your father, you know, talk about what your father did for a living and how that shaped really this passion for what will probably be the theme for the rest of this podcast.
Oh, okay. That's cool. My father worked for MPD for 28 years, Metropolitan Police Department, D.C. He retired as a detective. And, you know, he would keep his files downstairs in the basement, basically. And he was gone, you know, of course, being a curious kid about my father, because my father was my role model. No athlete or anything like that. When I was growing up, it was all about my father. So I would go down there, I would check out the files, man. Oh, man. And so the files showed me that what he deals with on a daily basis. My mother always told me, if your father comes home and he goes straight to the basement, all right, that means he's going to pour himself a drink. And he needs time to really just, he saw something bad that day. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He probably saw something bad and he needs time to just let it all out. And that's his way of letting it out. He'll go downstairs, he'll pour himself a drink, he'll put on some oldies but goodies. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's how I got into music too, because he would play music, all the old school music and stuff like that from all eras. Jazz.
So what kind of music? Yeah. He'll
play jazz. Yeah, he'll throw some classical in it. Those 70s music, disco, whatever he was in the mood for, whatever he wanted to hear at that moment of time. And then we always had house parties, and the house parties always, as kids would say today, I don't know if they still say this word, you know, cause my kids are all grown, but at the time when they were in high school, they were saying lit. I don't know if that's the thing still.
It's back. You know, it is back.
I don't know if that's
lit is back.
But yeah, so that's where it came from. And then what we're going to talk about later, but that came from is on my father's side of the family, my mom's side, they grew up here in North, New York, D.C., up north. My father's family, they grew up down in Greenfield, South Carolina. So it was two different lifestyles during those times when they were young. And my father, when I would go around with him, with his family, and talk to him, Uncle Levi, Roland, Cleophas, and all them, they had a story of the South that was all predicated on you being able to protect yourself, all right? As a Black man, as you protect yourself, protect your family, okay? And that's basically where it all comes from. What we're going to talk about. And then the main thing is that I got passed down a lot of stuff. And one of my things that I really got passed down is very special to me. All right. And it's over 100 years old.
Really? Really? Yeah. So you know, not to make it any more mysterious, you are absolutely the resident firearms expert out of anybody who's ever been in this Dolphins locker room, certainly in the last 25, 30 years. Right.
Right.
And so that's what we're talking about. So, because I am curious, and I didn't know this, you're saying that you were passed down, was it a handgun, something that was more than 100 years old?
Yeah, it was my father's mother's handgun that she carried in the fields when she worked the fields to protect herself. So, yeah, it was actually produced in 1911.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. And you still have it?
Still have it.
How about that? So that passion definitely you know, there was a time I was concerned at first early on when you first got there, and I was hearing this and that, and you know, we'd go play a card game and you'd show up with something and somebody wanted to buy, and you were, I mean, very knowledgeable, but I was like, man, there's a lot of knowledge there, and it sounds like you have quite a collection. But then you explained to me this, and that you really, you know, from the time you were a young man or a child, you know, you were kind of digging through your father's files and saw that the world is sometimes a scary place.
The world is evil. The men and women do evil things. Yeah.
Well, you know, as Big Seth said, you know, Jay Will, man, you know, I know we're going to get into more of that later, but I also want to make sure we don't leave football on this a little bit. We're talking a little football, you know what I mean?
right.
I guess we need to do some of that, right?
Yeah, exactly right. You know, I know you played, you know, you finished your career here back in 2002, 2004. But what I forgot is that you were in camp with when I was there as an undrafted free agent '94.
'94,
you played at Wake Forest, man. That's I totally lost that. And look at you, still look great, dog. I wish I could have made it to 2004. You know what I mean? Getting drafted in '93, mm-hmm. man. But look at you right now, man. Talk a little bit about that. You know where you started, and then how you ended your career with the Dolphins as well.
Hey, I think that was just it was supposed to be like that, you know. To start with the Dolphins, because I wanted to stay on that team when I was a rookie, man. That team to me was everybody I ever saw coming from high school up to college, watching games, watching how the D-line played. And then Marco Coleman, who also played in the ACC. Man, I was just like, man, I think Joe Green, that's my D-line coach. Come on, dude. I mean, that was like a fantasy come true. You know what I'm saying? So I was stoked to start there. I think it was a great start. You know, being around Joe Green and being around that whole D line from Marco to Jeff Frost, that what was the linebacker?
Brian Cox.
Some real cats.
Dwight Hallier, you had some big heads.
Keith Jackson, man. Come on, dude. You just had a whole old school, man, it's like old 70s, revenue show.
Talk about that music you were just talking about. That music you were talking about. Some classics you had right there, yeah.
Yeah, those are some classic players, man. Those are all some real players. So it was great for that to be my first experience, man. I had no idea I would land with the Dolphins. I was supposed to go to New England. You know what I'm saying? All day on the phone draft day. It was, you know, New England was calling me. But it turned out to be the best thing for me. But coming up, man, shoot, I just from St. John's to Wake Forest, you know, and Wake Forest, we we only had one win a season in my 4 years there. But as far as I was concerned, I was going to play every game, like, you know, just like I was going to win each game. And then basically you got it in your mind that I'm just going to win every battle on my side of the ball. So,
Jay, you know, who's your coach at Wake?
Oh, Bill Dooley.
Bill Dooley. Okay.
Bill Dooley. My D-line coach was Cliff Yoshida, same D-line coach that coached Bruce Smith up in Virginia Tech.
There we go. Okay.
I was waiting for Juice to find a way to try and tie it back to Cleveland. That's the theme here, Jay. Typically, Juice tries to find someone on the coaching staff or whatever to bring us back to Cleveland.
Or Penn State.
I was just waiting for it. Or Penn State, right. Yeah.
I know Jim Caldwell was here at one point. I was wondering if he crossed
with Jim. Or Penn State.
Yeah. Too funny.
No, he did. Look, I'm going to tell you something. Jim Caldwell, he made me into a better athlete going into my senior season. Because he changed up the whole training program that we were on that way. Now, the strength-wise, I was strong. But from the previous years before my senior, I felt like I just got gassed out before the fourth quarter. The fourth quarter was a struggle. Yeah, Jim Caldwell came in, and he totally changed up, as far as I'm concerned, cardio for us. All the drills we did, I mean, it got me in such good shape, man. As far as I'm concerned, I can go to all four quarters and keep playing at the same level. So he did. I will credit him for that.
That's it, though. Yeah. Okay, that's all. That's good. We can leave it there, Jay.
I credit him for that, man, because getting me in shape and getting me. And then he was always for me. He was always real. But the way I grew up, man, I take a man as a man. You know, what I'm saying anything on the field is on the field. Everything off the field, they said we just men. All right, I don't care anything that's on the field, off the field. You know, what I'm saying because I said at Wake. I was doing, man. Me and my crew. We were getting kicked out. new age of stuff. They had phone cameras, man. We were gone.
Yeah,
we've been gone, man. I mean, I'm happy we came up.
Well, that sounds like, you know, maybe the second volume of this interview. We need to dig into some that Wake Forest career.
No. It's a lot of cats that are doing good right now. They may not want that stuff to come up. Different names.
we had to change names, protect identities, big Sam.
Identities, man. Hey, it's still a VHS video hanging out there somewhere.
Yeah, the problem is nobody's got anything to play the damn thing in. I got all these tapes. My kids found them the other day. My son was like, "Dad, what is this?" And I was like, he said, "Do we even have anything?" I said, "No, I don't have a VCR. I got nothing to play this damn thing on." That is too funny.
Yeah, so, that's obsolete.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you said, I kind of like that it was meant to be that way. But at that time, 94 didn't work out in Miami. You go to the Rams. Have a really long career there. 6 years with the Rams, couple years in Carolina, and then free agency hits, and you come home. You know, we'll say you come home and you sign with the Dolphins and spend 3 years here. Talk about the D-line room, because those are some of my favorite dudes. Obviously, the JT relationship, you know, has been a longstanding one for me. But talk about that. JT, Wale, Larry Chester, Timbo. Talk about the guys in that room.
I mean, come on now. That, again, we're talking about old school players now that we all OGs. It was just a fun room. It was a fun room to be in, man. There's no arrogance amongst any of the players. Everybody was cool. Everybody was just cool. Everybody was there to learn. Everybody was there to win. We were there to win. We were there to go out there and do our best on every Sunday. But also the most important thing, I learned this from Dick Mills, the most important thing on the team is relationships built, the family structure. You had to be a family in order to succeed. And no different than a special forces team or anybody. We all have to win. We may have differences of opinion, but when we're on that field of play, on that field of battle, we're all in it together. So it was a great room. Plus, there's a lot of trash talking. You know, we play games.
Not that
good. All types of shit.
That's not the room to be in, was it?
Yeah. You couldn't have thin skin. Again, this is what I'm talking about. HR would have kicked us all out somewhere. Man, but you can have thin skin. Hey, you can't, as far as I'm concerned, playing this sport, a gladiator sport, you can't have thin skin.
Things change.
It's definitely a different world, Jay. It's definitely a different world, man. I was thinking the same thing, man. And I almost got, I got people coming, came at me hard when I came with that same attitude. You know, grown men handled it like grown men back then. Then they were like, well, you know, if you work at Walmart, you get into a fight with your employee, with a fellow employee, you're going, I said, this ain't Walmart, man. I said, this is a glorified prison right here, man. You know what I mean? I know we got better benefits and stuff. I don't mean to put it like that, man.
Yeah,
but, you know,
better benefits for sure.
But I'm saying, though, men have to handle themselves as men. I mean, the way you shower, the way you walk around the locker room, the way you handle yourself when somebody tries you, you know, it's the same, almost the same, you know, atmosphere, you know, obviously, you know, controlled a lot better, man. And I'm not trying to make that comparison, but I mean, that's how it was. But like Seth said, it is definitely a different time, different era, different way of doing things these days.
Right.
Yeah, probably a better way. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And realistically, like you said, Jay, you know, on the field is one thing, and then off the field, it should be a little bit different. Not everybody's cut from the same cloth. And even if somebody's talented enough to go out there and perform on Sunday, maybe they can't handle, you know, again, I think of that D-line room. What y'all had going on in that D-line room was probably a little different than what was going on in the offensive line room. Or oh, maybe 1,000%.
It always is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all it is. But you know what? Every offensive line that I was teamed with, man, I think those guys was just as wild as we were. But put it this way. If somebody made a movie about D-lines and offensive line, it'd be the same. It'd be funny stuff happening. But they think a little differently. We kind of straight to it, and they may go. They're gonna be creative with what they do. Yeah, big guys. Big guys always like to be creative. They consider themselves artists.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Big guy. All right, so are you an artist?
I am. I mean, I always had an artist eye, man. You know what I'm saying? I have a piece of artwork downstairs that me and my ex-wife used to get into it about all the time. It's a beautiful piece.
Yeah.
Beautiful piece.
Well, hold on.
It reminded me of one of my ex-girlfriends. Oh, yeah.
So, you say your ex-wife, it looks like you still have the piece of art. That's all I know.
Oh, I still have it.
She didn't want it, Big Seth.
No, she wanted it. But I took it. Yeah, yeah. I gave all the other art. She has all the other art, but I took that piece.
You kept that piece. Well, maybe it did remind you of something. Piece. Oh, that's right. Too funny.
No, I did. It's just, it's a beautiful piece, man. It didn't remind didn't remind me of any ex-girlfriend. It's just a beautiful piece. Okay.
Well, we need a picture of it. You need to, now that you do have a camera phone, you need to go snap a picture
I'll get it for y'all.
Perfect.
Yo, Big Seth, you know, from what I understand, I think the guys thought that Jay was that guy that always, you know, had their back, you know, and we had Big Todd Wade in the tank and, you know, last season, and he spoke about a time when he got into it with JT, and you definitely had your fellow defensive ends back on that one, man. Todd Wade said that, just know, honestly, you know this too, Jay, that when a fight breaks out, there's no fair ones. There's no one-on-ones, really. If somebody's on one of your boys, you got to intervene sometimes, especially if your boy's taking a little bit of an L, which JT talked about in the tank. He took a few L's out there. You know what I mean? So, but he said you had it. But Todd Wade said you had his back on that occasion.
Right, man. Because, you know, I grew up in a big family here in D.C., man. And, if you know, I ain't never have a problem going anywhere. But, you know, back when I was growing up, we had people in all northeast, southeast, southwest. So I can leave, you know, when I was younger, and my mother would drop me off at someone's house. I go outside, cousins out there, their friends out there. So you made friends everywhere. And one thing we never did, if there's a fight, you just can't fight. If it's one on one, it's a different story. But it ain't gonna be a group fight. It ain't gonna be a group. We all gonna get into it. That's right. How it is. We're gonna have each other's back. And then it also kind of it got strengthened in high school. Because I went to a military high school, St. John's here in D.C., when it was all military, all boys. And all the sergeants that taught us for military classes, all those guys served in Vietnam. And they were adamant about that team unity. Because, you know, in their aspects, that was life or death. It was life or death. A team member didn't cover his area of responsibility. That can mean death for him and the team member next to him. So it was really strengthened in high school. So yeah, being around those military guys, and they were fun, man. They were a little they could be a little off on some days, but they were knowledgeable men, and you could tell that they've been through some stuff.
But hey,
you know what? I remember my wife told me one time, I'm looking at y'all playing football out there, and all y'all men gotta be a little off a little bit. Y'all gotta be just a little crazy to play that sport. And then that's how I think about it. And then I read a couple of books. One called On Combat by Lieutenant Dave Grossman, and but it's all about what police officers, military guys, even athletes. That's what I really learned about just athletes, how your heart rate goes up when you're in a situation. Just think about our heart rates. Our heart rates are always up at 200 beats per minute when we're on that field. And we're making quick, decisive decisions. That's the high level of operating. All right, when that ball snaps, you're making decisions while you're at full speed and while your heart rate is up high. Most people cannot function when that happens. People who have not been trained properly or trained to do these things, they can't function that fast. They can't make those decisions that fast. So back what I was saying before you got all scared about
that. Well, I mean, you said you're talking.
Because in my profession I'm in now, and hopefully like my father said, he went 28 years and he only had to pull his firearm one time. All right. Hopefully this is the same thing happens for me. I won't go 20 years. I'll probably retire around 60. But as long as this ambassador wants to be ambassador, because he's real cool, I'll stay with him. But
we're going to get to that. People are probably wondering, what is his profession? So we're going to talk about your profession in a minute. Okay, but just so people understand, what is that current profession?
I'm a personal protection specialist, as they call it, and I work on a protection detail for Middle Eastern ambassador in D.C. And I've been with him and his family for 8 years now.
Yeah, so we're going to get into that in a minute, but I just, if people are wondering, what profession is he in now? So a personal protection specialist, Juice.
Love that, man.
Yeah, that's quite a name. But I want to go back to where JT, not a bodyguard, a personal protection specialist. Yeah, and if they had made that Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston movie, the personal protection specialist, it probably wouldn't have been as successful.
It was so, right.
The bodyguard sounded a lot better. But I see where you're going with it. but let's talk about the time, like you said, when you were JT's personal
protection. So
maybe Todd Wade was giving.
Right, so I'm sorry. Because you got some scared out there. Okay, so here it is. So when that happened, man, it was when I just saw a fight, it was gonna be, it was just, because we were having fun that day anyway. We just having a good practice. and they get into it. So I said, man, I'm going to jump on Big Todd's back. You know what I'm saying? That's what happened, man. Everybody was playing. Nobody, because literally, like, once I did that, once we all got into it, you know what I'm saying? Because they probably couldn't believe that I just ran and jumped like Superman on Todd's back.
That's the thing, you know, man. So, Juice, it was like, if you watch professional wrestling, and you're watching and there's a big battle royale and all of a sudden you hear the crowd screaming and everybody's wondering what's going on and you look over and then some dude comes running out from behind the curtain and jumps off the top ropes and that's like Jay came out of nowhere, like out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was fun, man, because ain't nobody, nobody was mad. Everybody was just like, what the fuck?
Oh, excuse that's right. me. No, you're good. You're good. Yeah,
he was like, what the fuck?
That's that. Fuck that. Say what you want, man.
That's right. We're old school. We don't get too sensitive until somebody actually edits this thing. That's a different story.
Right.
So too funny. So here's what I'm wondering. Was the loyalty returned? Because I remember a time that JT, who you were his personal protection specialist on that day and probably other days, JT at a Wale Agunlia, they got together and pulled a little prank on you. And happened to do it on national television. So you want to walk us through that one, or you want me to set the table?
Well, that was a funny day because I wasn't going to show up. I was not going to come because the night before, I think that was after a game.
Had to be a Tuesday. It had to be a Tuesday.
It'd be one of the nights because I know, unfortunately, I know I was drinking the night before. So I know I was doing that. So when I got up in the morning, I was like, man, I ain't doing this. So I called, who was the one involved with the press at that time?
Well, so Harvey, it would have been me and Harvey I bet you called Fudge Brown.
Fudge. That was
because we ran it through as if it was a community relations kind of make a wish.
Yeah. So I left a message and then she called me back all frantic. Say, Jay, no, we need you. And she did a good job. That was a good acting job. She should have got an Oscar. Because she really laid it into it. At least an Emmy, right? So first I was just laying in the bed like, I ain't doing this. And then slowly but surely, I'm just keep rising up with every word she's saying and how she's coming at me. I hear it in her voice. I said, okay, Fudge, I'm coming. So, I get out of bed, take a shower real quick and head down to the facility. And then she meets me after I, put on that tight ass jersey.
They didn't have the appearance jerseys.
They didn't have
back
the show jerseys.
Yeah, people understand that. You guys had to wear your game jerseys, which were not built.
Jerseys.
Yeah. Especially not for the big guys, dude.
Tight jerseys.
Right.
So then she gives me the update. She said, hey, okay, Jay, he's giving $10,000 to the foundation. He's a little strange. I say, yeah. Most wealthy people are kind of strange or awkward. All right, so that I was like, okay. So none of it rang any alarm bells to me. So I said, all right, cool. That's all right, cool. I've dealt with awkward before, guys like that. We had a guy like that in St. Louis, but he was real cool. But you would have never known that he had money. Anyway, back to this. So she sets the whole thing up beautifully. So I go over there, and the guy, the way he's dressed, I'm already saying, hey, he is. I mean, this guy's weird. And then once we get started, and I have a thing about kids being abused. I don't like to see that. So I think JT and them knew that too. That's one of my triggers right there. So I mean, they did a beautiful job. You can take it from there
to back it up a little bit.
People have to go to and see it.
Yeah. To back it up a little bit. There was a show at that time called the Jamie Kennedy Experiment. Mm. Jamie was was kind of pre MTV punked and same concept. Jamie was a comedian and a great physical comedic actor. And hopefully a lot of people listen to this are familiar with the Jamie Kennedy Experiment, but they came down and they wanted to partner with JT to prank some of his teammates. And so they set up the whole gag was as Jay said, and I love it. He set it up hook, line and sinker there that, through the community relations department, this big donor spent $10,000 to have this unique experience with him and his son. And we did it out on the practice field. Yeah. And we had, they hired some of the camera guys to operate their cameras for the TV show, but it was the local guys. It was like, I think Luis Zabala from Channel 4 and, you know, probably Ross Noble from Channel 6. And so they had, and we had Finn's TV back then. And so I think maybe Lindsay Zarniak, who ended up going to DC, you know, was out there for Finn's TV. And it, so it looked like it was a normal Dolphins event covered by local media. There was a tent set up as a kind of a green room for JT and then whatever athlete came in. And so we pranked Wale first, and then they pulled Wale into the gag for Jay. And Wale's a little more mild mannered and he's calm, and he was kind of freaked out, and he was like, man, we need to call protective services on this. But Jamie Kennedy was dressed up. He had the mullet. He
it was amazing.
Dolphins gear, helmet, the whole thing. And his son was all dressed up. And the son, I mean, he looked like he was 7 years old, sweet little kid. And then Juice, he would go out there. He said, you got to be tough on my kid. You guys are big guys. Don't be soft on him. And he would like play pranks on him. He was pushing him to the ground and the whole thing. And then we would
push
take
him down. Break. Yeah.
So it's on YouTube.
That's so funny. I remember that like it was yesterday, man. That was so funny, God. Man.
It was. And so with Wale, we let it run for a while. But with Jay, we kind of had to pull the plug on the gag because Jay, I
think he's going to kill him. He's going to kill him.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. And here's the thing that's really crazy to me. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, because actually, the point in the video where I had the ball in my hand, and he was getting close to me.
Yeah.
I was actually in my mind, I was like, yeah, I'm going to pick this up. I'm gonna pick him up and body slam his ass.
Yeah,
that's what I said. That's why I was like, yeah, you need to give me some space. Because at that moment in the time, I was like, yeah, I was the little devil in my mind. I was like, yeah, pick him up, Jay, body slam his butt, show him what it really feel like, then tell him, yeah, gotta be tough, can't be soft out here. But I didn't. I held my composure,
ready to turn the tables on him.
I was. Actually, I was pissed I didn't, because in later episodes I saw when he was with the hockey player. And the hockey player went at him. Yeah.
So you had an opportunity. You should have got him, Jay.
I should have got him.
You wish you had got a few in?
Because have you looked at the big man? At that time, I would have picked him up, put him over my head, and just threw him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Just picked him up and threw him. Then came up to him and said, hey, you got to be soft. You can't be soft now. All right? That's all part of the game. Sometimes people get picked up and thrown across the field.
Oh, man. It was so funny, Juice. And what was crazy about it is, you know, I got there early. Obviously, they had to set the whole thing up, and it was a film crew. It was a whole production. They had craft services trucks. They had two or three trucks. You know, they had the talent trucks for Jamie Kennedy, and all of it was parked over what is now the parking lot for the bubble. Well, I guess I say now the former practice bubble, but it was all parked over there, and they had the hedges. And driving in, because I knew what was going to happen, I was like, man, how are they going to pull this off? These guys are going to drive right by this thing, and something they're going to think something's up. But, you know, the folks from Jamie Kennedy Experiment were like, nah, we do this all the time. And if people aren't expecting it, and as long as it's not in the place that they're pulling in, and not one of those guys. JT actually said, hey, I don't think this is going to work. Jay and Wale drove right by it, didn't think twice about it, pulled up.
We did. Didn't.
It was great. It was great. Man, that was hilarious. But you were a good sport afterwards, but boy, your blood was boiling.
Yeah, I was. No, I was pissed. I was mad. Like I said, in the tent, when they got me in the tent, and I look back on it now, and all those Wale just messing with me. Man, what's going on out there? You mad, Jay? You pissed? Yeah, I'm pissed. You know, I'm like, where's that kid's mama at? So, you know, and then he got me heated in the tent. And I was so heated, I wasn't paying attention to JT, because JT couldn't contain himself. When I watched the video, he really couldn't contain himself. Wale did a good job, but JT, he wanted to start laughing.
Oh, it was so funny.
I wasn't paying attention to him.
Yeah, you were in the zone.
Yeah, I was in the zone. I was already there. I had tunnel vision.
You did. And if anybody watching these things ever wonders if this stuff is real, because I was there, you know, again, I was there, and Fudge was there, and I forget who else from the PR staff, but it was very real. These guys had no idea, and boy, I thought JT was going to have to jump on your back the way you jumped on Todd Wade's back if it had gone any longer.
Well, you know, like I said, once I told him to turn off the cameras, all he had to do was say something else, and I probably would have took him down to the ground.
Turn off the cameras. Yeah.
Time means everything, Big Seth. Time means everything. That might have been the last Jamie Kennedy experiment right there, man.
Yeah, it would have been for sure.
Okay, Jay, check it out. I'm looking at these notes, Big Seth, and one word written down right here. And maybe Jay can help me out. Tackleberry. What is that all about, Jay? What is Tackleberry about?
All right, so anybody in our age group should know. I dive in, new ones know, but they'll look it up. One of the funniest movies on my top 10 list is Police Academy. The first one, Police Academy, the first one. Hilarious movie. And there was a character in there named Tackleberry. Well, I can't remember what his officer name was, but everybody remember him as Tackleberry because he's a big dude, a lot of guns. He got guns everywhere, stashed everywhere, a lot of guns. So, you know, when I got to the league, my teammates would call me Tackleberry. Because I always ride guys over to the house, cooked out, whatever. You know, that's what my family did. That's my father did with his boys and his friends. So that's what I did. You know, I just wanted everybody to come over and cook out. But what they noticed, though, at the cookout, if we get to the conversation of guns, and then they'll see the collection. All right, just like women have a bunch of shoes and purses. Well, I had every contraption of gun there is to have. That's where it came. So guys just started calling me Tackleberry.
Eugene Tackleberry.
Okay, this is
Academy. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I think we might have a name for this episode, Juice. I don't know. Oh, too funny. And you really were. You were the real life Tackleberry in so many ways.
Yeah, so I guess so. I guess I would. I wasn't crazy like him. No, I believe in defending yourself. Yeah.
Or at least being prepared to do so, huh?
Oh, yeah. You sure? Yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Well, to that end.
It's bad people out there. It's bad people out there.
This is true. This is true. Well, I was going to say, to that end, I ran into Wale literally last week. Was in the post office, turned around, and he came in right behind me. And so we chopped it up a little bit. And I told him that, you know, we were going to be speaking with you. And I said, other than the Jamie Kennedy experiment, what stands out to you about Jay? And he said, well, you know, he had a lot of guns. And he said, you know, when it came to wanting to learn about firearms, and it wasn't just like, oh, he's a crazy guy with a bunch of guns in the closet. It was he was an expert. And if I ever thought about wanting to have a gun to protect myself and my family and wanted to learn about what made sense or wanted to learn about which gun, you know, for my wife, whatever it might be, we call Jay. To this day, we call Jay. He said he had just spoken with you recently. But he said, the thing is with you, I don't know, there was some particular gun that he ended up buying with your advice. But then he said that you convinced him to buy 7,000 rounds of ammunition. And he said, wait a minute, Jay, are you talking 700? And he's like, no, 7,000. He goes, so I'm still sitting here in my garage with 7,000 rounds of ammo. My wife's like, what's going on? He said, I don't know. I'm still waiting for Jay to tell me what's going on.
No, wait, I don't know. I can't remember if that was about where Miami. I probably, because I always stacked up my ammo because I shot a lot. I shoot competitions, so I shot. And then, wherever I go, I always give it to local law enforcement, and I end up going to their range and doing their courses of fire. So I shot a lot, so I kept a lot of ammo. But usually, what I would tell cats is make sure you have 1,000 rounds for each weapon system that you have in your house. All right, that's the minimum, 1,000 rounds for each weapon system that you have in the house. So I don't know. I might have told him that back in the day while we were still playing with the. I think I know what he's talking about. I probably did tell him I ain't talking about 7,000 rounds. I might have said maybe 2,000.
Well, maybe 3, had 7.
Maybe had 7 yeah, weapons. Maybe, 7 maybe he guns. Just told on himself.
Yeah, 7 weapons.
Oh, that's funny.
Maybe he does. But yeah. But so, like I said, but you gotta get see. He shouldn't have that much ammo right now because you need to get out there. You always need to shoot. You need to go out there, just do basic marksmanship drills. And if you can, do a couple of competitions. You know, I talk with people about that all the time, you know, and I train people up here in DC on my days off. And one of the things I always tell them is, this can't be the last time. Yeah, if you don't do it with me, just come to the range. I'll give you a short sheet that you should work on each time to build your marksmanship drills and your gun handling skills up. So you gotta get proficient. Just like an athlete is proficient at his sport, if you're gonna own a gun or carry a gun, you have to be proficient and at handling it and being safe with it.
So that's, I think, you know, I'm glad you said that. And I think we've got a couple more stories we're going to ask you about here. But I also don't want people to think that this is a reckless thing and that, right. that you right. are, people are calling you because of your expertise
yeah.
and
yeah, experience. Yeah.
And I do appreciate that you're sharing that. That you want it to be done safely. You want people to be responsible. And Juice, we've had a show where you talked about being a responsible gun owner. I'm not a gun guy, but I would hope that if people do own firearms, that they're at least, you know, taking these measures. So I'm glad you did bring that up.
No, I'll bring it up too. So people just don't think I'm out here just doing it, you know, as a personal guy or just as a guy who has no certifications, but I'm a law enforcement certified NRA instructor for shotgun and handgun. I'm an instructor. I'm a certified instructor for Maryland State Police, as far as doing their wear and carry for security guards, private detective, and doing handgun permits. In Virginia, again, I'm a certified instructor, general instructor, and a firearms instructor. So I have a little of everything. I go out and seek training all the time. All right. So if it's time that I'm off or I got some time and I can get the company to pay for it, I'm going to get trained. You have to keep it up. All right, that's the only way to keep up. Just like they say, in order to build muscle memory, you have to do something. I think the minimum is 5,000 times. Well, if you're going to own a gun and be a responsible gun owner, you need to be, it has to be over 10,000, 20,000. This is a lifestyle. And if you just can't buy a gun and put it on a nightstand and think that you're going to be ready to use it when the time comes, you're going to make mistakes.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, Big Seth, man, I think that's probably why Larry Chester texted us, man. You know what I mean? he texted us and said, ask him about the time he brought two fully automatic machine guns.
Oh, I do. I'll tell you what, I do have a story for that Tackleberry. All right. So they always call me, Tackleberry. I said, you know what? I'm going to really show these guys that what I have is nothing. What I have is nothing compared to the, you know, the firearms community that I reside in, you know, that I roll around in, that culture. And so at Markham Park, when we was down in Miami, I don't know if they still do it today, but usually it was the first Saturday of the month or the first Friday of the month, they would have a machine gun shoot. So everybody that owned a machine gun would come out there. They'll have cars or big Frosty the Snowman or anything to shoot at. So I took them out.
Frosty the Snowman? Why are you unloading a machine gun on Frosty the Snowman?
Yeah, anything that they could find to shoot up. Yeah, they would just put it out there. It could be anything. All right, so I took them there, and as we're walking down the line, man, their eyes are just getting big. They're looking at this. They're like, whoa. Yeah, everything's on the table. M60s. Everything's a machine gun. By the time we left, they was like, man, no, I apologize, Jay. Yeah, I apologize. This is something else right here. I see what you're talking about. Yeah, so, yeah.
So I'm not just really a novice compared to these guys?
Tackleberry's cousin. Yeah, right. I'm just a novice.
Twice removed.
That's exactly what it is. I'm just a novice. I said, this ain't what they have. I'm not even there yet.
Well, that's I don't know. I don't know that if I'm completely buying it. I'm sure people take it to an extreme, but I respect your skill set. I'll say that much.
No doubt about it. Without a doubt.
That said, we called another former defensive tackle teammate of yours, a guy who you actually see kind of frequently now, Jeff Scanina. So
yeah, I see Jeff all the time, man.
Yeah, so Jeff is now, for people who don't know, he's an assistant defensive line coach with the Washington football team, and Jay is in the D.C. area, so he said that you guys get together a lot, and he told me two things. He said, one, make sure that you put it out there that I have never lost to Jay in shooting plays. And he said he kicked your ass recently. So is he telling story too?
He did. I had a chance to tie and take over, but yeah, it's been a while since I shot clays. I used to shoot them all the time. But he did beat me up down in Florida.
And oh, it was here?
Me up here. Yeah, well, we shot that. We, you know, when we with each other, we would go to Markham Park.
Oh, I see what you're saying when you guys were down here.
They had a nice sporting clay. So that's what you're talking about. I've never beat him. That's right. He beat me there too. And up here after years, man, you know, not to make this as an excuse, but I took one of my family's, you know, antique gun, you know, shotguns.
You brought the 100-year-old gun out there?
No, not the 100-year-old gun. It's a shotgun. It's an old Mossberg, but it's 20, you know, you have to have at least 28 inches on your shotgun to shoot. I couldn't take my tactical shotgun out there. So I took that one out there. And it's still a good shooter. I just have to get used to it. But yeah, we went out there and We shot. Yeah, he got. First, it was tied. We were good. Then on some of the courses, yeah, I missed some shots. He got up probably about 2-4 clays. But there was a stage where he missed all his shots. I think he hit one. And I had a chance to I felt like I can catch up, but I didn't.
Okay. All right.
He got the win.
So he also said, though, that he's already kicking your ass in the Cheesecake Bake Off.
And no, he can't say that. He cannot say that. We haven't even had that bake off yet.
What is the Cheesecake Bake Off?
So I don't even know why he's talking that trash now. I'm going to have to get on. I'm going to have to call him right now. No, because look, I love to cook, dude. I cook everything. I smoke. I can cook some nice little dishes in the kitchen. I remember that Miami Dolphins episode I have. That's all I like to cook. And I also dabble in like baking. And I recently, because when I was in high school, I used to make my high school girlfriend cheesecakes, but they were just mediocre cheesecakes.
Was this the painting?
So No, it wasn't. No, but yeah. So I decided to make a nice cheesecake and. From everybody that's had it, they paid money for it. So, and I also make a nice rum cake too. Using good rum. I don't use no cheap rum.
What rum do you use for that? And we need that recipe, Jay. What's the recipe? Send it to us.
That diplomatical rum. You use that. That dark one, not the white.
Okay.
Right. I just want to know some of this cake.
The dark one. Got you.
Yeah, the dark one. Yeah. Dark one's very good. Matter of fact, you can sip on that all day. But yeah, so that's it. Yeah, so now we haven't even had that competition yet. So he can't claim a win on that.
Okay, so he's stirring the pot. So who's going to be the judge?
Yeah, he is stirring the pot.
Is it Jack Del Rio? He said Jack Del Rio might be the judge.
Yeah, Jack Del Rio. He's going to be the judge. Yeah.
Well, maybe he's paid off because Del Rio's his boss, right? He's the defensive coordinator.
I'm gonna tell you something. Yeah. Look, when he tastes my cheesecake, it's all gonna be in his facial expressions. I don't care if he's paid off or not.
Okay.
All right. Let's go by that. You see how people react to it. Yeah. See how they react.
Right.
We need some of this damn cheesecake.
Yeah, I got it. I don't care what he say after that.
All right. Well, we need to sample cheesecake, man. Sounds like it.
What you need to do with him, Jay, is you got to put it up there anonymously. You don't know whose is whose. You know what I mean? Just to, you don't let him know it's yours or Jeff's, and then go from there.
It's not just going to be me, him, and Jack Del Rio. We're going to have some other players.
Right.
We'll have some assistants there so we can cut the cake. They'll handle it, however, put it in front of Jack, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, like a lineup. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
lineup. Yeah. You got to put a bunch of...
I like that.
Got to put some different guys up there. You know, we talked a little bit about it earlier, Jay. You know, you're talking about what you do now as the personal protection specialist. Talk about what you're doing now. I know you probably can't mention anybody's names, I mean, in particular, I'm sure. But talk about what you're doing now professionally, boss.
Well, you know, like I said in the beginning, my father was my role model. So when I retired, I knew I was going to get into one of two things, security or selling guns. So I did the selling guns part. And then after 2008 hit, I just went ahead and said, okay, let me get to the security field. So I started from the ground up, from working construction sites, working for mom and pop, small-time security companies, to, you know, let me see what the top three security companies are in the country. And at the time, it was Allied Barton, Securitas. I can't remember the other company. And Allied Barton had a big footprint in Charlotte at the time. So that's what I did. I went to work for them guys. And the good story about that, I'm going to tell you a good story about that, because I put in my resume with them. And I got a call from the director of security. I went up and did an interview with him. And he was an old school Marine. You go into his office, and it says Semper Fi. That's what it says. You just know it. And then the way his demeanor and everything. Yeah, so his whole demeanor was like what's with my uncle was a drill sergeant in the Marines. And his stature just was like, don't F with me. All right. So I got the same thing from this guy. I remember sitting there, he said, you know what, son? You know, usually I wouldn't even gave your resume a second glance, you know, because you don't have any of the qualifications or the experience that I'm looking for. And I did, besides working those small mom and pop shops. But he said, but you know what would interest me is that I'm looking at your career from college to the NFL and playing for those years. And it tells me that you have discipline and you have determination. So he said, I'm going to give you a shot here, son. But I tell you what, if you mess up, I'm going to ruin you.
You're going to ruin you?
He's going to ruin me. That's what he said. But, you know, like I said, it didn't surprise me because my uncle was the same way, man. My uncle, boy, when I was coming up, he ain't play. So, okay, and then I seen the pictures. My father said, let me show you. Your uncle may have scared you. So he would show me. We got photo albums everywhere. You know, everything's in pictures. And he showed me my uncle as a drill sergeant. I was like, okay. My Uncle Harold, that's why he like that. He don't take no mess. All right. He's just straight. That's who he is. And my father said, man, he was that like that when I was a kid. Well, I ain't understand it. So the military was right up his alley. So yeah. So when he said that, I understood. I understood.
Right.
And he hasn't ruined you. So apparently you haven't messed up.
I didn't mess up. I did mess up. So I learned the job and then I transferred up here to the World Bank here in DC. Worked as a sergeant, you know, when he wrote me a reference letter and everything. And worked as a sergeant up there for some years. Then I went to the Internal Revenue Service. Worked as that captain of the Guard Force. And then as I'm doing that, because like I said, that was cool, but I was always wanting to do personal protection.
Right.
And so, you know, while I was working, I would go take classes. During all these classes, during all these, yeah, I know, yeah. During all these jobs, I would always be working contract jobs. You know, so I just wasn't working my full-time jobs. I work a contract job because the contract jobs give you a lot of experience in EP work. You know, security guard jobs. You know what I'm saying? You're standing on post, you're doing access control. So what I really wanted to get into was executive protection, personal protection. So I would do contract jobs for these other companies. One company called Black Ice, which is owned by a former Navy SEAL. And he recommended this other guy that was working this detail that I'm on now. They needed somebody. So he recommended me. I had an interview and I've been working with them ever since. I've been working with them to the point where before we were just at a guard shack, all right? We just had a static post, which is just that we were at the house. And then it grew from that to now, I think we had 12 guys at that time. Now we have over 30 guys on the detail. So we got two teams. We got a static team that covers the property 24 hours a day. And then we got a mobile team that covers the family movements and the ambassadors movements throughout the city and the states.
Dude, that's serious shit right there.
Yeah. Matter of fact, you know, after this, I got to go do an advance for movement that we're going to have later on tonight. And then what advance is that I go to the spot, I have a point of contact, or I talk to the security director or whoever's head of security at that time or whoever's running security. And I look over the area, see where we're going. I'll see where the hard points are, shelter in place points. I'll do the routes. I'll tell you everything you need to tell about for the guys who are bringing them there. Basically, I'll be there when they come and then I'll walk them through. I'll walk the client to where they need to get to. But the guys, they will know from my advance report what to expect and where to drop them off at. And basically, without being there themselves, I'll send a whole script of pictures and explaining what this and this, you know, what everything is and what they have to do.
Jay is that dude, Juice.
That's that dude.
Cool job. I love what I do.
Yeah. I have no doubt that you love what you do, man. But we love that you were able to, on your off day, spend a little time with us and reflect. And hopefully people aren't too scared after hearing all these stories, but it seems,
man,
like
they should be scared at all.
Yeah. It seems like you've kind of got it all together. And I love that you turned your passion into a profession, right? You did that with football and now you've done that with this other passion for personal protection.
I mean, I always tell people, like, you know, I remember sitting where I'm at, and a guy my daughter was dating in high school, he's a musician. Musician. And I was sitting here on the porch talking to him. I said, you know, I was saying, he said, what's your plan? You know, what fathers do. You know, we just do it. And yeah. So he's
Were you polishing one of your 3,000 guns at the time?
No, I don't do that. I don't do that. Yeah.
Some bad boy stuff.
Depends. Yeah, Will Smith, Martin Lawrence. Right.
This is a good kid, man. He was dressed well. So I'll just ask him. He's a musician. He loves playing guitar. He plays in different bands where he says he plays wherever he plays. I said, that's your passion. He said, yeah, but people don't think I'll get far with it. I said, don't let people say, because if you're doing something that you love to do, you will always get up in the morning ready to go do it. All right. Nothing will stop. You'll be happy. That's what I'm saying. So this was always my passion, even before football, from my father. So I knew that, you know, if I'm going to work any job, I want to love my job. I want to be excited to get up in the morning And the whole thing about it, the thing that I missed from being in the league, man, was the camaraderie. You know what I'm saying? That's what I really missed. You know, I can watch football and play Madden any day. You know, I got to do that. But what I miss is that locker room camaraderie. And I get that here because, like I said, we talk a lot of trash in our own little workspace. You know what I'm saying? But that HR probably wouldn't approve of. But, you know, it's just us with the guys. We have that. It's no different than NFL. We have that one mission. And I want that one mission is to get our clients from point A to point B and back to point A safely.
There it is.
That's our mission. Period. Point blank.
It's awesome, man.
There it is, man. Well, our mission was to catch up with some old friends and tell some great stories, and we certainly did that here today, Jay. So I can't thank you enough, and it's just always so good to see you.
Man, no problem, man. You too, man. Like I said, I'm going to get down there.
Yeah, prices you've been threatening.
Prices are freaking going up. No, prices are going up, man. I'm looking at this like, hey, just the other day. But everybody's opening up. And, you know, like I said, I wish I should have called you when I was down in there for my birthday last year, man. We had a good time.
I'm here.
I know, but look, sir, I'll get down there.
All right, man.
All right, thanks again for diving in, Jay.
All right, no problem, brother.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Dive up in that fish tank. Who that? Sitting down with Seth Living. Seth. OJ. Juice, woo! Man. Ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans. Number one, of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude. We okay, to dive up in that fish tank. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie. Bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject, you know it's all about them fans. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject, you know it's all about them fans. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. That fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.